Thanks for bringing this important topic to light, a chance to have some interaction and engage with our elected officials.
Kevin, we'll switch it over to Gary Werdish, representing Minnesota Farmers Union President Gary Werdish. Gary, good morning.
Thank you, Joe. And you said you got to eat the mic. Okay, there you go. Thanks again for having it. And Gary Werdish, President of Minnesota Farmers Union. I farm in Renville County with my son, or I should say I assist my son. I'm his cheaper hired hand, I guess is what you call it, but glad to be here.
All right, Gary Werdish joining us. Also Steve Schlungen, Chairman of the Board with AMPI and Stearns County Dairy Farmer. Steve, good morning.
Morning, Joe. Yeah, I farm with my wife, Cheryl, just about 7 miles south of here by farming. I serve as chairman of the board of AMPI. I've been doing that for 7 years now. I serve on the board of directors of National Milk Producers Federation. And I'm also on the Stearns County Dairy Advisory Committee right here with you in Freeport, Joe.
All right, quite a few members on hand, too. Also, Mark Dorenkamp joining us. Mark, good morning. Mark is with Brownfield Ag News. Chasm Radio is an affiliate of Brownfield Ag News, so you made the trip from Casson last night. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of this.
All right, Mark Dorenkamp joining us. Also, we go to our left, Joe Becker. Joe, thanks for joining us, representing First District.
I'm the vice chair of First District Association right now. I have a dairy farm south of Grove City, farm with my daughter, two daughters and one son-in-law. About 500 cows down there.
All right, Joe, thank you. And representing Lando Lakes, also a farmer as well, Brad Bold. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, good morning. Glad everybody is able to get out here. First of all, I want to thank Chasm and Congressman Peterson for taking the time to put on a forum like this. It's really important considering what's going on in our industry right now. And just a little background on me. I do represent Lana Lakes. I am on the PNR committee.
And Brad, I'll have you put that microphone a little closer.
A little closer.
There you go. There you go. Let it rip. Don't be shy.
This morning, but now I guess I need to be a little more hungry.
There you go. So, you're good to go.
Sorry about that. But anyway, I represent Lana Lakes and the PNR committee, and I farm with my family who are back home at Dorrich Dairy. We're about a 500 cow dairy in West Central Minnesota. So thank you again for putting this on today and look forward to the discussion.
Also joining us on the panel, Mr. Ron Koopmeiner is representing Elmdale Creamery. And Ron, you got a couple of hats you wear. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yes, thank you, Joe, and thank you, Colin, for giving us the opportunity as farmers to visit and work through this situation. I feel like we're in the 11th hour of this situation, and it's critical. So I am a patron of the Elmdale Creamery. I 42 farms up that represent Elmdale, and we are actually also a part of First District. We have 8 associated creameries that are also down there at First District. So our makeup down there at First District and Elmdale, we make up 900 farms. I am a board of director up at Elmdale representing the family farm up there. And I'm also a colleague of Joe here. I am also down in First District there. With Joe, with other, with 9 of us that sit in the room working on this. So, we farm, my wife and I, Janet, farm 50 cows. Been there for 34 years, and this is dearly in my heart. So I thank you guys.
Ron, thanks for being here this morning as you broadcast here at Shady's Hometown Tavern, Main Street, Albany. Folks in the audience, if you have questions, you want to bring up an issue, you want to share maybe a personal story, Mark is going to be your guy. Just flag Mark down. He'll come to you. Once again, just talk directly into the mic. More than happy to take your questions here as the morning goes on. We got about 4 minutes before our first break this morning, before we break for news and markets. And Colin, we'll start with you. Just a short introduction here. 2017 ended real quickly here. We had some tax reform going on, jumping into the new year. And there's a couple of issues. Things changing, MPP, there's quite a bit on the plate this year, a farm bill as well. So just in general, Colin, there's a lot to be gained and continued and made better here.
It was announced yesterday, I believe it was, that the MPP sign-up is going to take place from April 19th to June 1st. So even if you've been signed up for MPP before, you will have to re-sign up during this process if you want to be part of the program. This new sign-up will be under the $8 5 million pound coverage that was done in the Senate when they added the dairy provisions and the cotton provisions to the CR in the Senate. I was not part of that negotiation. I sent recommendations over to Stabenow and Leahy, which they did not listen to. Under the proposal, there is going to be a payment to farmers if you sign up. The reason there's going to be a payment is because they made it retroactive. So if you wait till June 1st to sign up, you're going to know how much you're going to get paid for the first 4 months when you sign up. Personally, I think this is going to come back and haunt us. We've never done anything like this before. But given the tough times we're in with dairy, I think it's probably okay. So if you sign up for the maximum under the new program, your premium would be $7,100 for the year. The payments you'd get would be $29,831. So you would net $22,732 if you signed up for the maximum. If you don't have 250 cows, then you'd have to scale all that back down. So there is going to be a payment if you sign up. It'll be based on the first 7 months of the year, because projected out for the last 5 months, they're not projecting anything under $8. So what's projected right now, there will be no payments the last 5 months. And this gets to what I recommended to Leahy and Stabenow, that they do a $9 program instead of $8. And the reason I recommended that was because you could see that if you didn't have $9, you're not going to be in the money for most of the time. For whatever reason, they didn't accept it. And they could have done it without costing any money at all. And I've got a score on this. The CBO does not score this. So right now, this is in the farm bill. And so if that proposal would have been accepted, the payment you would get this year would be $63,000 instead of $22,000. And that's what I was trying to tell those guys. What you need is this kind of money to get you through this situation. Unfortunately, they didn't do it. And so now this is in the House farm bill at this point. If we ever get a farm bill done, then it will be a better situation, because with $9 coverage, you'll get, this will also work for 2019 based on the projections. So that's kind of where we're at. I would recommend to everybody that you sign up and you'll get some money out of the program.
We'll get some more details coming up on that. We'll also check in with our other panelists regarding MPP and more, and get some more insight into that. Once again, we welcome your questions here as we go into our second segment here in just a few minutes. We're coming up at 9:30. We need to break for some news and markets here on Chasm Radio. All right, Brad, thank you very much. Good morning here on Party Line. Just a reminder, our Agri Talk program, usually at 10:06, can be heard tonight at 7:06. We'll have a replay of that a little bit later on today. Also, just a reminder, too, just after 10 o'clock, we'll try and attempt to have a Minnesota Milk President, Dave Buck, join us by telephone just after the 10 o'clock hour. He's in southeastern Minnesota, and he said, yeah, he was dealing with about a foot of snow, and he said, yeah, it just wasn't going to be a go. So he'll try and join us just after the 10 o'clock hour. We'll get a few of his comments as well here this morning. Let's go over to Kevin Papp, a Minnesota Farm Bureau president, following Colin's comments before the break, Kevin. And just give us a synopsis, a summary. What are you hearing, concerns, things that Colin mentioned? Are you seeing folks in favor of this new MPP? Just kind of what's the story you've been hearing?
Well, I think there's a lot of concerns on everything in agriculture. It's not just dairy and the financial stress with that, but it's a lot of agriculture. So certainly we're hearing a lot about the importance of a farm bill, having that safety net, also the dairy fixes we've already talked about, but other things like trade and all everything else. It seems like everything is kind of snowballing here a little bit. If I could, I do want to go back earlier. We talked just a little bit about the Section 199 and the fix with the tax, and really want to thank Representative Peterson and And, you know, I know it's a tax committee thing, but I got to believe having a CPA, not only as the chairman of the Ag Committee, as well as a CPA as a ranking member of the Ag Committee, that they had some help in the coming together a conclusion of that. So we certainly want to thank the congressman and all those representing agriculture for that fix.
Minnesota Farm Bureau President Kevin Papp, Joe Becker representing 1st District. And Joe, just give us a perspective, I guess, wear your farmer hat, first of all, and then wear a board position with 1st District. There's a lot of concern out there on the farm. It's a downtime. How do you guys try and read and react and work with farmers yourself?
Well, I know the past couple of months, is this working?
Yep, a little closer, Joe.
Okay, the past couple of months, 1st District did pay on the heavy side just to get more money out into the country. We know that farmers are struggling out there. One of the concerns we got with this MPP program is a lot of people got a sour taste in their mouth from the way it worked in the past, which it really didn't. Hoping that people take a good look at it. It looks like it should work for us now, and we're hoping to move forward with it.
All right, Joe. Joe Becker, switch on over to Brad Vold here. And Brad, same situation as well. A farmer yourself representing Land O'Lakes here in our panel today. And kind of discuss what you hear, maybe personally, what are you feeling in this whole dairy situation as well? Just give us some insight on yourself, please.
Well, I think just to sum it up, you know, I think like Colin stated that, you know, this situation that just got released on the MPP program, I think is a good band-aid to help us get through what we're working through right now as dairy producers. But I really do think that our focus needs to continue to work on trade. And obviously with our current administration, we're really struggling with different trade agreements. But I really feel confident that with former Secretary Tom Vilsack leading U.S. DEC, that we're going to get some feet on the ground in some of these foreign markets, just like the example that's being used with China right now with the research facility there, and really start allowing us to open some markets to move product out of this country. We all know that, you know, 15% of our product has to go somewhere, and we need to really continue to focus on getting those markets opened up through our co-ops and through our processors to make sure that that provides us a stepping stone to work through this glut of milk that we're facing here in the U.S.
Brad, you brought up a good point, that surplus, that glut of milk. Gary, we'll go to you. Gary Wirtish, Minnesota Farmers Union president too. And what's how can you summarize the situation? What are you hearing from your members and being active and involved? What's some of the feedback you have?
Well, it's Farmers Union, I guess. We're one of the groups that we're a little frustrated. We think there should be more money put into the farm bill. We keep hearing there's no new money, and I know Colin has to play under the rules, but there was a lot of money the deficit, adding to the deficit wasn't a problem when we passed the tax bill last fall and various in the budget bill just recently. So, you know, you look back in 2009 when we were going into what they called the Great Recession. Agriculture, we had a nice bump there. We had some profitable years, and we paid back some debt, and we probably played a big role in keeping the country from falling into a depression. The money, because agriculture was strong during that time. Right now, we need a little payback. Agriculture is struggling, and I don't, you know, dairy is probably in the worst situation, but you get your grains, you know, we're struggling right across the board. So we would advocate we should be looking at more money. You know, on the dairy, you know, it seems like we're reactive now. We're not proactive enough. You know, the dairy provision, we're losing, hearing from members, and I can cite one of our members, a couple hundred cow dairy herd, they're selling out, and they've been in that farm about four generations. Can't make it. This, you know, this will help. It'll give them some cash, but, you know, it's still not a long-term solution. You go back to the last farm bill, Speaker Boehner was very adamant that the milk income loss contract was not going to be part of the next farm bill. If we'd have kept that, you would have kept those guys in business. You know, this, you know, Colin's proposal now that, you know, it's going to help, but I still concerned long-term, how are we going to keep them in business? Because you look around Minnesota, you look around other states, the extremely large dairies are still building and still expanding, and we're losing what we want to consider the families, the dairies that have kept communities like Albany strong, Stearns County strong. It's been them family dairies, 50 to a couple hundred cows, whatever number you want to pick. We're losing them. That's, you know, that's the frustrating part. We can't continue down this road. And I think that, you know, it's just plain frustrating. We're always reacting. Now we're trying to come up with something to help them, keep them going, but not a long-term fix to keep them in business. So,
Gary Werder is joining us, Minnesota Farmers Union President. Ron Koopmeiner is to my far left. Ron, we'll get your comments. And we've shared a couple of phone calls as well, and just the concern and regarding MPP too. And during the break, you brought up, and I think a lot of people's response too, they got a bad taste in their mouth from the previous deal, and then now to come up with some money out of their pocket in a bad situation to go into it again. That's kind of one of your concerns as well, Ron.
Correct, Joe. And Colin, I'm not throwing you under the bus, but I did go back to Fort three and a half years ago when we laid out this plan in front of us. And I do remember you said this is on the plate. And that time, the 650 was the sweet spot. I'm one of the pigeons that took and bit hard on that program. And I actually went a couple tiers above it. And I thought there was a safety net in this whole picture, but there wasn't, because the bungee strap was too long and we all hit the floor. And like I said, I'm not blaming anybody, but it should have been looked at 3 years ago. Again, it should have been pulled back and said, hey, this isn't going to work. But now we've gone through three brutal years of abuse here, and we've got some scars that are deep, and I don't know how we're going to get out of this mess with the program that we got in front of us right now. I think it's too little too late is really the bottom line here. Because the biggest thing when I'm looking at that thing right now, it says premium. And I see financial institutions in the audience here. And they're all very humble people because of the reason they've worked with us the last 3.5 years to continue. And mind you, we did come off a good milk price. And there was some money to put aside for that premium. But like I said, I figured there was a little security that, you know, if we needed to use it, it was there. Because I do not farm insurance. I would rather have a pay price so I could pay my premium. I'd rather, you know, have a crop so I could sell a couple semi-loads of corn than calling the crop adjuster out there. So I don't farm crop insurance either. So right now, back to my financial institutions, how can I go to the bank and tell them I need some money here and then a gamble here and hope like, you know, our government's going to come through on this picture here and, you know, they're going to give us some money. But the thing is right now, what I look at myself in this picture, I mean, I shouldn't laugh because that ain't even going to pay half my electric bill every month. So, I mean, How are we going to work through this? I mean, we got to get serious here. And like I said, exports all the way down the line. I mean, we need to turn this ship around to make some money here. And we're very humble people. I mean, I'm sad to say that the family traditional farm that's been out there for decades, we feed, we're less than 2% of the population. We feed 100 plus of the world. And we're the ones that are going to get written off in this picture. I mean, because this morning, I'm sorry I was late because I did milk my cows this morning. And like I said, we're the ones that work the hardest, pay the most, and are going to get the least out of this picture is the way I'm looking at it right now. Because, I mean, I look at 10 years ago when everything was falling, collapsing. We weren't going to let that up on top fall. We threw money at them at the big money. So, okay, thank you.
You betcha, Ron. Thank you very much. We'll get back to you, Ron. Let's go over to Steve Schlungen over there, chairman of the board with AMPI and Stearns County Dairy Farmer. And we've had a couple of phone conversations, too, regarding MPP. And Steve, too, you were leery that a lot of folks are going to have that quote-unquote kind of hangover effect from this previous deal, and we got to remind folks that, you know, maybe take a serious look if this is a solution for you or not.
Yeah, Joe, and first of all, thank you for having this, and thank Colin for being here today. This goes back quite a ways. Like Ron was saying, over the last 3 or 4 years, we really haven't had a safety net. We really gave up MILC, we gave up price supports in the last farm bill, in the 2014 farm bill, expecting MPP to be the answer to take over for that. I was on the National Milk Board when we talked about this, and we made this proposal, And the problem is that at the last minute, it got the feed cost formula got cut by 10%. And that really took this program from being something that was worthwhile to something that was almost worthless. And what this new program is doing is really not changing the feed cost formula, but really bumping every category up by about a buck. So buying $8 coverage now is really like getting $7 coverage. And for 14 cents, it is an insurance program. It's going to cost a little money, but it's optional how high you want to buy up. And right now, I think if you're a dairy farmer and you don't want to even look at this, I think you're going to miss out. You're going to wish you would have, because you can buy up to $8 coverage now, which is really the $7 coverage, for 14 cents, and pretty much be guaranteed to get your premiums back from this year, plus the last time you paid in, plus the time before you paid in, which is really why we really fought hard to make it retroactive, because it probably won't look good to the public, but it's something I believe dairy farmers deserve, because they paid in 70 some million dollars more than the program paid out over the first 2 years. And it was nobody's fault. It was just that the fact that the CBO scored it to the point where they needed to cut the formula price. So now going forward into next year, to ask for $9 coverage is really like asking for $8 coverage, like we did in the first place. And $9 coverage right now would be a great safety net on your first 5 million pounds of milk per farm, which would cover a lot of our farms in central Minnesota and around the upper Midwest. And I think it would really do a lot to really keep our community strong and actually get a lot of young people interested in back into the dairy industry. So I know it's late. I know we've lost people. It's too late for some. But thank God that somebody's doing something to make it better this year, and that something is going to be even better yet in the next farm bill, and hopefully we can keep that going.
Steve Schlungen joining us on the panel. Thank you, Steve. Once again, Mark Dorenkamp is here in front. I'll have Mark kind of do a couple laps around. He's not as scary as he looks to everybody, so if you just kind of tap him on his shoulder, if you have a question, he'll come to you. You can stand up right where you are and just mention your first name, maybe where you're from, if you're in a dairy business or maybe a dairy farmer, and then mention who you want to direct your question to. And we can do that. Feel free. You're kind of the first priority. So if we have 2,000 questions, we'll take the rest of the time and get to your questions. So feel free to talk to Mark. Mark will come to you. He'll flag me down, and we'll get your question on the air here. And we'll go to Colin. Once again, Congressman Colin Peterson. Colin, give us a little microcosm of D.C. for folks who maybe haven't had a chance to go or see. How is agriculture represented in Washington? Are you kind of by yourself in a room, or you got two or three allies with you? Kind of give folks a paint that picture a little bit and what that looks like.
Well, we have some allies, but there is no good way to put a good spin on what's going on in Washington. You know, it's a mess. It's the worst I've ever seen in the time that I've been serving. And, you know, the problem we have in agriculture is, you know, you have this in Minnesota, too. There's just so few people in agriculture. You know, people don't understand what you guys do. And they don't give you credit for what you do, you know, because they think, what's the problem? You go to the grocery store, it's everything's there, you know. So the one thing I wanted to mention is that we were just all focused on MPP, but there's more that was done with that CR. We took the cap off of the LGM dairy. That had limited that program. That is now going to be, that's taken off. So if you want to get into LGM dairy, there's now an opportunity to do that. The other thing that's happened is that we now are going to tell RMA that they can consider milk to be a commodity. That was not the case before. So because of that, we're working on establishing a idea that came out of the Farm Bureau to create a revenue insurance program for dairy, which would be similar to what's done for corn or soybeans or whatever. We expect that product to be ready in 2 months. RMA is working on it. So you're going to have options. You're going to be able to go look at LGM. You're going to be able to look at this new insurance program, and you're going to be able to look at MPP. So it's not going to just be one thing. It's going to be more complicated. You're going to have to spend more time figuring it out. But I think long-term, this Farm Bureau insurance product has more potential for long-term stability in the dairy industry than anything else we're working on.
All right, Congressman Colin Peterson will go to the audience. Mr. Orbeck, just make sure that lovely button says green, and we should be good to go. And just whoever you want to address your comment to, Mike.
It's Mike Orbeck, a farmer on St. Martin, Minnesota. We have 100-cow dairy. I'd like to, Steve probably could answer this a little more because he was involved in it, and Colin could too. But I've been in LGM, and I was in MPP for the last 4 years. To me, MPP is a small dairy type program. LGM is a large dairy type program. LGM is takes pretty much a gamble. The way it's set up, you have to use a Chicago Board of Trade, correct? And then MPP, you're set on the way, but they're using the Chicago Board of Trade for the feed price. And the problem when you do that with MPP, as a local farmer, most of the time the small farmers raise their own feed. If you would use the national average price, what it costs to grow a bushel of corn or beans or soybean meal, whatever you're using, that would have changed the formula by quite a bit. Where we got caught on this one is the fact that corn and beans are also worthless. And after this morning, soybeans are even more worthless. So you can comment it from there. That's just my opinion.
Well, we looked at the feed cost, and National Milk, they were pushing changing the feed cost as opposed to changing the top number. But what I tried to point out to them, it's the result is the same. Now, they're correct. They screwed this thing up when we did the Farm Bill in 2014 because at the last minute, they cut the feed cost by 10%. That made the program less effective. But I was carrying the water for National Milk, and I listened to them and thought they knew what they were doing. That's the last time I'm going to do that, okay? Because they were wrong. The 650 was wrong. No matter what the feed cost was, it wasn't enough. You know, so we tried to look at the feed cost. The CBO is going to score that at a huge amount. So we couldn't do it. So that's why I came up with this idea going to $9. It accomplishes the same thing. You know, so you're going to have $17 milk guaranteed if you go to $9, you know, on average. You know, so I got big guys complaining that they think this is too good, that we're giving you guys too much. I get a lot of that flack coming from around the country. But the point is that the small dairies are only about 15% of the milk in the country. That's the reality of where we're at. And so I tell people, these small dairies couldn't produce enough milk to cause a problem in the first place. You know, if they did increase production, which would be good. But the big guys, this $5 that they put into the $5 catastrophic, they put in this thing in the Senate, that was for the big guys. And I think there's a bigger danger that the big guys are going to overproduce because of that $5, because that's their safety net. And they're only paying $100 for it, which is another problem. You know, so, you know, it's not perfect, but we're doing what we can do. And I think the $9 gets us back to where we need to be in general terms. Now, the stabilization fund that the Speaker made me take out, if we'd have had that, that would solve a lot of these problems, you know, but that didn't happen. So we're just doing the best we could, the best we can with what we got. It's been too long, I agree with that, you know, but I will admit that the National Milk led me astray, and they're never going to do that again. Okay.
Congressman Colin Peterson joining us this morning. I'll have you swing the microphone down to Steve Schlangen as well, and I know that question was kind of sent your way, Colin. He kind of bumped in front of line like that to you, but we'll make it work. Steve, we got about 2 minutes before news. Feel free to get in what you have. We'll rejoin you after our break as well, but go ahead and respond if you'd like.
Well, just getting back to Mike's question, really what happened at that time is we lost $2, really. We lost $1 because of the feed cost formula was cut by 10%. We really lost $1 because the corn price went down. If corn would be at the price it costs to raise it, which is about 4.25, that would boost that feed cost formula by about $1 a hundredweight. So it just so happened it all happened at the same time. Otherwise, we would have had one or the other of those dollars at least to help this 650 mean something. So really what we got was 650 was 550, and we had a weak corn price, so now it's like 450. So the program really didn't work as intended at all, but we could look back all day on it and not get anywhere. But I think looking ahead, I think the program now going forward is going to be helpful right now, this year, and I think it has potential to be a lot more helpful in the years to come. And I mean, even if you're 800 cow dairy, you could still probably get 25% of your milk in on the, under that 5 million pound cap and get some benefit. So it's going to benefit the smallest guys the most. And as you grow from there, it's going to benefit farmers less. But they're also the same farmers that have options and tools in their toolbox to protect themselves through the CME and through other programs. And as far as the catastrophic level, I think the $5 coverage is only on the first 5 million pounds of milk per farm, right? The catastrophic coverage?
It puts a 13 floor underneath all milk.
Well, the way I understood it, it was only on the first 5 million pounds of milk, but I might be wrong, because that'd be huge, because that's where your huge exposure would be, because that's on 90-some percent of the milk
McCluskey,
in the country.
You know McCluskey.
Oh, yeah, I know Mike.
Yeah, so he's been pushing for this, you know, and the, you know, they, these guys have been in my office, and as I understand it, this $4 and $5, this is a floor under their entire production, and they're not really paying anything for it, you know. So they went from $12 to $13. You got some of these guys that claim that they're producing milk for $14, you know. So if you get to $13, they're getting close to their cost of production. So I would not have done that. It, you know, the Senate went ahead and did it. I wouldn't have done that. I would have left it at 4 million, because I think we potentially are going to get more milk out of that, and that's the last thing that we need.
I guess that I understood it wrong, because I thought it was only on the first 5 million pounds of milk per farm that you had the $5 coverage. Otherwise, it was
more. Well, the first 5 million pounds, if you, no matter how what size, if you're 10,000 cows, you can still get that first 5 million pounds covered under the MPP at $8.
Well,
so you can. Everybody gets that, you know. Now, we did put safeguards into the law that says that these guys can't create more than one entity and get more than one of these $5 million. Because some people are trying to do that. They're trying to set up a bunch of different entities so they'd get $5 million on each one of their operations. We put a provision in to stop that. But everybody gets this MPP at $8, no matter what size you are. And that was one of the ways we sold it to the big guys. Say, look, well, you know, you might complain about the little guys, but you can get the same benefit on that that amount of milk as the little guys. And so what are you complaining about? You know, so.
Well, the way I understood it is the minimum you could insure is 25% of your production, I thought. It was 25 to 90%. So if you're over 20 million pounds of milk, then you'd have to insure more than 5 million pounds of your milk. And maybe a million pounds of that will be at the next premium tier, which would be $1.36 a hundredweight. So I think that's the kind of the cutoff where the big guys would maybe quit using it, because it will cost them a lot more.
All right, Steve Schlung and Colin Peterson joining us this morning, along with our dairy discussion panel here at Shady's Hometown Tavern, Main Street in Albany. We have another hour to get to, but before that, let's take a break for station identification, some news, some weather. We'll be back in a few minutes. Also, Dave Buck, president with Minnesota Milk, should be on the line as well. You'll join us next here on Chasm Radio.
For over 60 years, you have come to depend on AM 1150 KASM Albany. Now on FM 105.5 HD2 KDDG Albany. And 24 hours a day on KASM Albany at FM 107.7. Now from the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council studio, powered by the Soybean Checkoff.
Hey, Brad, thank you very much. Here at Shady's Hometown Tavern in Albany, our Chasm Radio dairy discussion taking place. Once again, a big thank you to our sponsors, Central Minnesota Credit Union, Compeer Financial, Stearns Bank Albany, Land O'Lakes, and Midsoda Manufacturing. First District also providing the cheese out back as well. We got coffee. We also have a midday brunch as well, or not a midday brunch. We're going to have a chicken buffet. That's what we're going to do. We're in Stearns County. We're going to have a chicken buffet. That's what we do. So we'll have that coming up after 11 o'clock. Before we get to our panelists, we got Dave Buck, Minnesota Milk president, on the line. Dave, thanks for joining us. How are you doing this morning?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much we got other than too much would be the right answer, I think.
You bet, Dave. And talk about yourself once again. Give us a background for those folks who are unaware of you, your farm, your position with Minnesota Milk. Give us a little background on yourself, Dave.
Well, my family and I operate actually two dairies. I have three sons, and my wife is very involved. I am also in my second year serving as president of the Minnesota Milk Producers.
Dave, we've been talking a lot about MPP this morning. What are your feelings on this new program? As sign-up will begin on Monday, just announced yesterday that enrollment period. From a Minnesota Milk standpoint, what's your guys' view on this program?
I think it's definitely much improved or what it was, and I've heard it earlier today that the concern is that people got burned by it, but I think it's totally different with the numbers now, and everyone needs to really take a good hard look at it, especially those average size herds and smaller. I think there was quite a bit of improvement. One concern I have is the LGM program and this program. We've had people that, as people were let out of the MPP in January, they did the LGM, and now with this being retroactive, they may not be able to qualify for the MPP during those months. So it seemed like they were doing the right thing by protecting themselves, but now the people that didn't do anything might be in a better spot. But those are all issues, I guess, that happen when you change programs.
Buck joining us with Minnesota Milk, Minnesota Milk president from southeastern Minnesota, joining us by phone this morning. And Dave, one topic that hasn't come up with our discussion this morning is regard to health insurance. And I know you gained a lot of statewide and national attention with you and your family. And have we gained any ground? I kind of know the answer to this whole situation, but doesn't seem like we have come very far for that, for options for farmers. I know there's some out there right now, but obviously not everybody in the ideal situation.
Yeah, I think there's been some changes and more options, and we all certainly appreciate that, especially ones that are geared towards farmers or self-employed people. But the cost hasn't really come down, especially in southeast Minnesota. I think we might be the highest cost health care area in the entire nation. So that continues to be a challenge, and especially for people or farms where they both work at home and don't have the opportunity to go out and get a job and get some health insurance coverage. So it remains a challenge.
Dave, you know, I ask a lot of dumb questions on a daily basis and still get paid for it. So here's my 13th one of the day already this morning. On a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of situation are we when it comes to the folks in the dairy industry? Are we at a 10 or are we at a 13 already? How would you kind of put us on that scale?
As far as the dairy situation, it's, and I've been doing this for 40 years, and, you know, you live through the ups and downs. That's part of the game, I guess, but this one just seems different. I'm not sure why, but it's definitely a challenge, and I'm hoping we can find some answers with the farm program, and as mentioned earlier, there's some new programs coming out that might be able to help help people. It's definitely a serious situation. I mean, just in our area, within probably 25 miles of me, I know of 1,000 cows that have left. So it's definitely hurting some people.
One final question, too. I think we need to reemphasize it has a domino effect, too. We got seed folks in the audience. We have feed folks in the audience. We have financial institutions in the audience. It's not just a one-player game here. Everybody's involved, and everybody can be affected, correct, Dave?
Yes, that was my local vet made that comment about how many cows he had lost in his business, and it's the worst he'd seen, and he's, you know, been doing it for 30 years also. So, yeah, it affects everybody. There's no doubt about that.
Minnesota Milk President Dave Buck. Dave, we appreciate your time this morning. I'd say we're all going to come down and help you shovel, but then I'd be lying today.
Appreciate the offer anyway, and thanks for having me on, and thanks for putting this forum together.
All right, thanks again. Dave Buck joining us this morning from southeastern Minnesota here on Chasm Radio. As we continue our dairy discussion, we're going to go to our left. Going to get you guys a chance to kind of respond to the conversation before the break and also Dave's comments, Joe, and anything to add from your perspective as well here this morning.
Well, I think he's right. You know, the dairy industry is in dire need of some help. First District, we have just under 900 patrons last year. In 2017, we lost about 50 herds. Already this year, the first 3 months, we're pushing close to 30 that have quit already. And I believe that a lot of them are not quitting because they want to. It's because they have to. And, you know, a lot of them, their equity, they've burnt up probably a lot of their equity on their farm. Now they're selling cows that are probably at cow market price or just a little above. You have to feel sorry for a lot of dairy farmers that are going out of business right now.
As we go to Brad and Ron, too, and Brad, with you, too, it seems like we have that cloud following us, too, where we're producing a surplus, and that's got to go somewhere. And whether it's a trade situation, I think you brought up trade as well earlier. You know, farmers are doing too good of a job. I hate to say it, but we got just a surplus of milk out there. That's an issue, but please respond to any of the other previous comments.
Well, I guess I'm going to echo a little bit what Joe was just saying about, you know, what we're seeing in the countryside. You know, there are producers that I know that are fourth generation plus that are being forced to leave the industry. I see a lot of people who are my age that are making that decision because the passion is gone for what they have always loved to do. And they're at an age, I'm not going to share my age, but where they can still have another career path and leave their true passion behind. I think we're just in such a unique situation right now with the glut of milk. And, you know, I'm a fourth generation farmer myself. And I think we've never been in a situation where there isn't a home for our milk. And I think that's really scary. And that's another elephant in the room that we really need to deal with. You know, we talk about trade, and all this stems from being part of the world playing field. And we forget that, you know, Europe came off a quota system, so they were allowed to go forward and grow their businesses more than we ever thought they maybe would. And we can go into the Russian situation and it really snowballs. But at the end of the day, back at our home farms, we need to figure out how we can work through these scenarios. And I just to sum it up, you know, you always talk about it takes a village to raise a child. And nowadays, regardless of your size, it takes a village to run your farm. And you alluded to the finance people, the seed consultants, you know, the list is long. And our dairy, like a lot of dairies, really fall hard on those individuals to help us make the decisions when it comes to marketing, animal husbandry, and so forth. So we're just playing in a different world right now that we've never played in before.
Thank you, Brad. Brad Vold joining us this morning on our dairy discussion panel. I'll have it swinging on over to Ron Koopmeiners. And Ron, a farmer representing on the board of First District and also Elmdale Creamery as well. And Ron, just a response to some of our earlier conversation before the break and also Dave's comments as well this morning.
Well, Joe, I'm concerned with what Colin had said earlier about that top number. That registered real clear with me, and how are we ever going to slow down this production that we're flooding the market with when you're giving these guys the option? We're leaving the gate open, and we're giving them a security net up on top too yet. And because when I look at this whole thing right now, it's a premium. It's a game again. I mean, I'd rather go back to 8 years ago when we had the other program. At least we were all equal in this picture. I mean, it was based on the pounds of milk. I mean, and you could go to that level depending on how big you were. But right now, if you don't have the money to go up to that $9 number, how are we going to be, you know, equal in this game? We're not equal in this game. And like I said, I'll survive and there's many other people in this room will survive because we're good at what we do. But I'll tell you this much. I mean, and you, we said the co-ops that sell the fertilizer, the feed, the equipment dealers that we need, and they need us. I mean, it all stems back to our infrastructure is built in our communities. And if we go away, what's going to happen? I mean, it's going to be the tumbleweed effect here. And I mean, and Joe, I know your dad and your brother, and your brother loves the farm, and I feel for him, but he's early in this game. And I when I have young people ask me what I think, and I don't know, it's they love running the land, being a good steward of the land, and love what they're doing, providing for themselves and making a living. That's all we're asking here. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we go out to Washington. I mean, if we would cut the fat off the top on Congress and that, we'd have a lot of money in the picture here. I mean, if they'd all take the brutal effect that we've taken in the last 3 years, they'd fix this real quick. And I'm not throwing you under the bus again, Colin, but it's the truth, right? I mean, if those people would feel that we're feeling right now, take a pay cut. I mean, bottom line, so.
All right, Ron Koopmeiner is joining us. You mentioned my brother, just let the record show he's early in the game, but he's still older than me. All right. Mark Dorenkamp joining us as well. Mark, you got a question. Bernie Quisto over there from Compeer Financial.
Good morning, and thank you again for having us. We've gotten a lot of the questions about what are the details of the new program and that type of thing, and so I've had several questions, but I realized that the USDA release that just came out this morning answers a lot of those questions, and I guess I just would encourage all of you also just to go to that USDA website to get some of that information. FSA, I'm sure, is going to be bombarded with calls and that type of thing before the sign-up, but it seems to be that there's a fair amount of information in there. But it does still pose a little bit of the question about for those people who were involved in that chose LGM during the gap period, and does that lock them out of this guaranteed payment because their contracts are likely to expire after the June timeframe?
Apparently, according to my staff, if your contract expires after the sign-up period, you're out of luck. I don't know if people didn't think about that or whatever, but that's the way that's structured. If your contract expires before June 1st, then you're able to sign up, you know, and be part of the MPP program. But, the way the program works, you know, if you take a look at the futures market, you know, before you get into the program, you're going to have a pretty good idea whether it makes sense to invest in the program or not. You know, the problem is that it doesn't always track what the futures market doesn't always track what actually happens in the real world. But I can tell you this, right now, if you sign up for the coverage in 2018, you will make money, you know, significant money. It looks to me like if you sign up in 2019, according to Scott Brown's projections for what the margins are going to be, I would recommend you do not do it in 2019 if it's $8, because you will lose money. But if it's $9, you'll make money. And that was the point of what I was trying to make earlier. That's why I tried to get them to go to $9. So then you would have an ongoing safety net that gets you in the range of what you need to put some floor under your prices. You know, sure, you're going to have to pay for some of that, and that's new to producers, but I think at $9 is not perfect, but it does provide a safety net that is much better than what we had before.
Congressman Colin Peterson joining us this morning. We're going to go to Mark Dorenkamp once again as State Representative Paul Anderson joining us. Paul, thanks for being here, and I'm guessing, well, too much snow in your neighborhood to do any field work this morning.
Yeah, the snow is blowing around, but the road's not in good shape this morning, so difficult to get here. But thanks.
I'll have you bring that mic a little closer there, Paul.
Okay, thanks. Road's not in good shape either this morning. Thanks for putting on the program. It's a difficult topic. In my talking with farmers, the one thing I hear besides the fact that the price of milk is too low is some frustration that they can't add a cow to their lineup, and yet the big dairies keep on getting bigger and bigger. mentioned that the number of dairies going out of business is too high week after week, but yet the cow numbers in Minnesota and nationally, I think, stay the same. So my general question has to do with the processing end of the business here in terms of how the big ones can keep getting bigger and the smaller dairymen, if they want to add a cow to help their cash flow, they can't do it. What's happening there?
Well, I can just speak on behalf of AMPI and what we do with our own cooperative and our members. We don't have restrictions on what our producers can produce if they want to expand. We want to communicate with them and know what their plans are for expansions. But we have not put any restrictions on the growth of our own producers. We have taken on some of the large milk that you're talking about. And short term, that might look like that's really hurting us up in the upper Midwest here. But long term, I think if it wouldn't be for some of the assurance of having that milk supply, we wouldn't be able to make investments like we are in Sanborn, Iowa, with doubling the plant, which really cuts our labor costs per hundredweight in half. It increases cheese yields. It allows us to pay more to all of our members for their milk. And the same thing in Painesville. We're planning an expansion and getting new technology in Painesville. So without the assurance of having a solid milk supply to a certain point, we would not be able to go to the bank and get money to invest like that. So we feel that in the long run, they're helping us in our plan so we can have a facility that's up to date and will be competitive for years to come in the global market. And whether we like it or not, we are in a global market. And I think a bigger issue right now is what's happened in Canada over the last 2 years. We've had producers in Iowa that were selling cows to people from Canada coming down because they raised their quota by 10% because they didn't have enough butter fat to make their own butter. Well, that's one thing. They have a 300% tariff on butter fat or butter coming into the country, so they want their own butter supply. But then they take the byproducts of making that butter, and they're selling it to customers in Mexico for less than we can afford to sell it for from AMPI. And they're paying twice on a milk price to their farmers than what we are. So that's highly subsidized. I don't know, if we can't fix that, then maybe we have to look at having a two-tier pricing system in our own country, with one price being for the domestic market and one price being for global market, because we're competing against people that aren't playing by the same rules, whether it's Canada or the European Union or other parts of the world. But we are in that market, and we need these trade agreements for sure to be fair. And we just got to be on a level playing field with those producers around the world, because we can compete at that level, but we need a fair level playing field.
All right, Steve Schlungen joining us this morning representing AMPI. We'll get comments from Gary and Kevin coming up after the break here at 10:30. Joe from First District representing Joe Becker on the board. Your response to that as well, Joe, this morning.
Okay, the policy that First District has is we allow anybody to expand on the present farm. We are not taking on any new producers. We haven't for quite a number of years. We don't allow a producer to build on a new site. And so we're trying to keep the room that we have in our plan for our present producers so that they can continue to grow if they see fit on their own facility that they have.
All right, Joe, thank you very much. Coming up here on 10:30. Gary, we got 2 minutes before the break here, so feel free, we can get into some of your comments regarding what Joe and Steve had to say as well.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that a little bit. I think it's time we had an honest discussion here. About 2 weeks ago, Wisconsin Farmers Union brought in a couple of Canadian farmers that served on their Canadian, I forget the exact title, but this is the chair and the vice chair of the farmers organization. And in Canada, they have what it's called, they passed the Dairy Act, I believe, in 1965, and they put the quota in the stabilization price for their country. And he says they have a future. As farmers, he can pass it on to his farmer. Right now, they are getting paid equivalent of $27 a hundred. for their they put more in promotion than what we do here in the U.S. But butterfat, there's been a huge demand for that, so they increased their herd. But I we're in a global market. I understand that, but what we're doing now is not working. We keep producing more and more and getting less for it. That doesn't work. Just like if you're raising corn, you got to buy a bigger truck and sell it for less. It doesn't. It's the same scenario in milk. So I have a trouble with us trying to change a Canadian system that's working well to their farmers. So we want to change it so their farmers go broke like us. I think we need to take a hard look at, and Steve maybe mentioned, maybe it's a two-tier system. Because we probably don't have the appetite to go to a quota system or quotas or management, production management. But we need to look at it because, right now Minnesota's a good example. We got the very large dairies expanding and we're losing the small ones. So it's not working.
Gary Word is joining us, Minnesota Farmers Union president, this morning here on Chasm Radio. We're coming up on our last half hour of our dairy discussion this morning here at Shady's Hometown Tavern, Main Street, Albany. We'll come back as we come up on 10:30. Any questions in the audience? We welcome your questions. Mark Dorenkamp will be around, and we'll be down to our final 30 minutes as we go up until 11 o'clock this morning. It's 10:30. Let's get some mid-morning markets here on Chasm Radio. All right, Brad Milkey, thank you very much. And yes, Milkey is his real last name, everybody. So thank you very much, Brad. As we continue our broadcast, once again, thank you to our sponsors, Central Minnesota Credit Union, Compeer Financial, Land O'Lakes, Stearns Bank Albany, and Midsoda Manufacturing. We appreciate their support of our dairy discussion. Also, thank you to First District for the cheese you're enjoying this morning. Coffee and milk as well. We'll have a chicken buffet lunch afterwards. And we appreciate your attendance this morning here in person and also on the radio as well as we approach our last 26 minutes here on Chasm Radio. So if you do have a question in the audience, we do appreciate your time and your questions. And once again, just stand up, mention your name, if you farm or if you're from a dairy organization, and who you want to direct your question to. We'll go ahead and do that as Kevin Papp is directing me to talk to Mr. Mark Dorenkamp. And Mark, you have a question in the audience here this morning.
Yes, we do, Joe. Thank you.
All right. Good morning. Emily Wilmus with University of Minnesota Extension. Thank you, Joe and Chasm Radio, for putting this on. My question is for Congressman Peterson, but I'd be interested to hear the rest of the panelists' thoughts on this topic.
And Emily, I'll have you get that a little closer.
All right. So obviously, the current state of the agricultural economy has brought a lot of issues to light, including that of a general lack of resources for mental health resources for farmers and those in agricultural communities. And so I was just wondering, Congressman, what your thoughts are as far as how to address this issue. I know Congressman Emmer is working on his Stress Act, but do you have anything to add on what we can do to address this? And I know that various cooperatives have sent letters to farmers, and that's been met with mixed reviews. There's just a lot of talk on this in mainstream media, so I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, Representative Emmer has this bill that Representative Nolan is also a co-sponsor of, and I've signed on as a co-sponsor as well. So I'm supporting it. I have suggested it be put into the farm bill because I think it's needed, especially what we're going through with the price situation, not just in dairy, but in agriculture in general. And one of the things that's been missing in this farm bill debate, and I think Gary has been talking about this, but we should have more money in this farm bill. This farm bill is not adequate. If we have a normal year or a below average year, we're going to have a ton of people in big trouble, way beyond what we are right now. And so I don't have farmers very enthusiastic about this farm bill because it's a continuation of what we got. And they said, this isn't going to work. So I think we need to start thinking about some of these other issues, putting them into the bill so we're addressing what's going to come at us next winter.
Colin Peterson joining us this morning. Mark Dorenkamp, once again from Brown Fuel, joining us. Mark, you have a question in the audience.
Yes, good morning. I came a little bit late, but just wanted to say that I was quite impressed with the appointment of Secretary Vilsack, former Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack, to the Export Council. But I think in our survival that we all talk about here this morning and prices or whatever, it takes some time to put wheels under this product. We're talking about the latest information I got is increased production 1.5, 1.8, whatever. And that's really our dilemma that we have here in the United States is where is this product going. We cannot consume it domestically over here, so we need to put it on wheels or get it to some customers. Going back to Steve's comment on probably a two-tier pricing or something that we can move this product, whatever. And so that's my comment, is we have to address overproduction before we can talk about a price, and to have the government come and support our dollars and on our home producers is a great thing. We want to keep the farms in our area, but it isn't going to work. So it's my opinion. I'm John Funk. I'm a dairy farmer with three of our sons in the local area.
Colin, is that a perspective we should be taking on looking at volume and what we're doing instead of pricing, kind of in reverse, where, you know, sometimes you look at the price of things and not maybe necessarily the input of a certain product?
Where do I start? You know, I've been harping about Canada for a long time. We allowed Canada to keep their supply management system, and what we agreed to 20 years ago is they can export to us, but we can't export to them. And they've, as Gary said, they're getting, I think it's more than 27 bucks a hundredweight. I did some calculations. If you own 100 cow dairy in Canada, your net income is going to be $400,000 net. Because what they do is they control their market. They don't let anybody into it. And they set the price, the government does. And you got to have quoted milk and all that sort of stuff. Well, so now what they're doing is this Class 7, which was developed, which was not in NAFTA. We had started shipping into Canada because they had a shortage of this ultra-filtered milk. They shut that down. And there's just a letter this morning that I got a copy of here on my phone from Vilsack, Mulhern, and Dykes to USDA and to the USTR, because apparently they're worried that they're going to give this up in the NAFTA agreement. They're not going to do anything about the supply management. They're going to give up the Class 7, which means Canada will be able to continue to dump this powder into the market, which is what's underpinned our price. And if this is probably one of the worst things that could happen to us, if they give this up. That's the only good reason to have a renegotiation of NAFTA, is try to get at that issue. So it's we screwed up 20 years ago, and how you get this thing fixed, I'm not sure. But Canada, you know, the number two and number four processors of American milk are Canadian companies, and one of them is owned by Canadian farmers. So Canadian dairy farmers own more processing than Land O'Lakes, than DFA, than First District, any of these companies. The Canadians own more processing than we do. Why? Because they made all this money and they can't invest in Canada, so they're coming here investing in the United States. It's a huge problem. So unless you get that fixed, I don't know how you solve this issue of getting rid of the milk, because
Congressman Colin Peterson joining us here this morning. Mark, you have another question over our far right.
I'm Dr. Tom Zeck with Freeport Veterinary Service, representing the clinic here today. And my question is for Colin Peterson. We are overproducing, but what are we doing on a national scale to maybe limit our production? For example, we have mentioned everybody on an even playing field. And it also addresses when do economics of scale actually become improper trading amongst ourselves. My example is environmental concerns. Right now, we are regulated by animal units, and our expansion is limited by our environmental concerns in this area, in the Midwest, whereas out west, our larger dairies are shipping heifers out there to be raised because they are only under restrictions for milking animal units for environmental concerns. So heifers have no concerns with that. The example is you can have 10,000 cows milking, but you can have 30,000 heifers on the same site, and your milk cows are the only ones that count. Is there any standardization in the works or talked about nationally for environmental concerns?
Well, the new EPA administrator is trying to get rid of some of these regulations, and he stirred up quite a hornet's nest to the point where they're talking about firing him. But you know, it's not universal out west that they're able to do. The people in California are in much worse shape environmentally than we are, significantly worse shape, to the point where they don't think they'll have a dairy industry anymore in California in 10 years. What's happening is they're moving to New Mexico, West Texas, and those places. Most of those are coming out of California. And those states, apparently, they're out in the middle of nowhere. It's desert, high desert. They don't have any wetlands, and that's part of the issue. I mean, one of our problems is this wetland law. You know, and at least hopefully we're going to get rid of this Waters of the U.S., which would have been a real disaster if that would have happened. You know, so I don't have an answer. You talk about having two-tier pricing. Government probably can't legally do it under the WTO, but the co-ops are now starting to use supply management within the co-ops to try to deal with this extra milk, and that's a good thing. And maybe that's what we're going to have to do into the future.
Colin Peterson joining us this morning here on CASM Radio. Our dairy discussion continues coming up in our final 15 minutes or so here at Shady's Hometown Tavern in Albany. And once again, for folks who have questions, just kind of raise your hand. Mark Dorenkamp is out and about here. We'll get your questions in here before 11 o'clock. And Kevin Papp, will go to you and get your comments too. And I know we've talked trade just very minimal here this morning. We're seeing some of the effects already this morning on some of these retaliatory issues. Soybeans down anywhere from 27 to 30 cents here this morning in the futures. And you've said it before. I know many have said it. Trade is just a necessity. And we're kind of walking on thin ice here in this situation.
You know, we've got low prices. And what we need for low prices is more demand. And whether that's international demand from trade or whether that's demand right here at home. And adding value, you know, certainly renewable fuels is important. But our number one way to add value is animal agriculture. We've talked this morning a lot about more cows, getting others in, and really the best way to get that next generation into agriculture, to bring them in, is through animal agriculture. Labor is their number one asset, and that's how we need to continue to work. That generational sustainability is so important. So not only do we have to worry about that markets, that demand, that trade from overseas that you mentioned, Joe, but also how do we continue to grow our animal agriculture so we can have those opportunities for that next generation to be more involved in agriculture.
Minnesota Farm Bureau President Kevin Papp joining us this morning. Mark, you have another question in the audience here this morning.
I guess there's a charge for a second question. Colin Peterson, I was just wondering if you'd be willing to offer some insight into the immigration law issues that are being discussed right now.
I've been working for 15 years to try to get a system for immigration for agriculture. And we've been able to get nowhere because we've been hijacked by both sides. And I have to tell you that I am very pessimistic that there's any chance of getting anything sensible done on immigration in the near future, because this has been completely politicized by both political parties. You've got the president stirring up things with his border wall and all this other stuff that's got turmoil going on within the issue. And I just don't see anything coming together to deal with this problem. Now, it's a huge problem for a lot of agriculture, especially for dairy farming, as you are aware, I'm sure. But it's a bigger problem in California, Arizona, Florida, Texas, so forth, where they're depending on these people to pick their crops, and if they don't pick them, they rot, you know. So we've got some people working on this with a new system, an H2G system or whatever it is. But whenever you get the government involved, you're going to drive up the cost, and the question whether it's going to actually work or not is, you know, a big one. My solution is this, and I've advocated this to a number of people, that we set up a system where we put you guys in charge of immigration on the farm so that you can go down the border and whatever you do, you can hire anybody you want to work on your farm, on your dairy. It doesn't make any difference if they're a citizen, whatever. As long as they're working for you, you can give them a blue card and you're in charge of them. And as long as they don't cause any trouble and go to jail and break our laws, they can continue to work. When they're done working, they go back to where they came from. There's no citizenship. There's no path to anything. They're just here to work. And most of these folks that are working in agriculture do not want to be citizens. They want to work here and go back home. You know, so we're stopping this whole thing over this citizenship issue, which frankly is never going to get resolved. Because on one side wants to deport everybody, and the other side wants to make everybody a citizen. And neither thing is going to happen. You know, so I just think it's best to have put it in the charge of in the farmers. You are the ones that deal with these people every day. You know whether they're good people or not. You know, you're much better than the government does. You know, and let you be in charge. That's what I think we should do.
And Colin Peterson joining us this morning. Mark, you have a question this morning.
Yeah, and again, for the congressman, any progress on finding some resolution within the House Ag Committee on the SNAP division? You're shaking your head no, so movement there?
You know, it's a complicated situation. Last week, I spent a fair amount of time going to offices to find out more about the SNAP program. And I went to people that actually administer the system. And I explained to them what the Republicans are trying to do. And they were in shock and said, this is not going to work. You know, and they're trying to fix problems that don't exist. You know, they're trying to say that this is about having people work to get food stamps. That's not what this is about. We have work requirements that have been in the law since 1996. And I was in the room with Bill Clinton when we put those requirements on. And they're still there. The problem is not that we don't have work requirements. The problem is that we have given waivers to all these states and areas so they don't have to comply with them. And that they're not getting at that problem. That I would work with them on that, but that's not what they're doing. They want to set up a whole new government bureaucracy for mandatory training, which is unnecessary, and it's a waste of money, in my opinion. You know, so let's get to work on the things that actually are a problem, not what's perceived to be a problem. You know, and the other problem with what they're doing, they're going to expand the category of people that are now 18 to 49 that are required to work. They want to add that to 65. That is a big problem. If you get somebody that's 55, 60 years old that gets laid off, and, you know, they're probably not going to find another job. You know, so it puts a whole other group of people in a situation that I don't think we need to do. So I'd like to work with them on what the problems are in the SNAP system, not what is perceived to be the problem. And that's where we're at. We're gonna give them an alternative next week, see what if we can move this thing off of the dead center. But I told Kevin on the way over, I have talked to Conaway and his staff for 6 weeks about this. They have not changed one word or one period in the original language after all that negotiation. That is not a negotiation. It's my way or the highway. And it's just not going to work. And I keep telling them, and if you put this bill on the floor with a divided House Ag Committee, watch out. You're going to see a lot of stuff taken apart on the floor because you can't do that. And so we'll see what happens.
So, Colin, what's your response to folks who say, is the battle worth it if it sacrifices the farm bill in general?
Well, if we don't get a farm bill, we'll get an extension. And the extension is going to be basically what we have now. You know, and the farm bill is what we have now. The only place you would lose is you wouldn't get the $9 coverage on dairy, you know, right away. We wouldn't get the increase in CRP acres that I've been trying to get. We'll get the reform in the CRP system, but in the safety net for the other crops, nothing changes. So I've had people say to me, you know, I mean, when they come into my office, the number five thing on their list is the farm bill. What they talk to me about is trade, environmental issues, all these other things. The farm bill is way down the list, you know, the RFS, you know, so I don't know. They have now infected the Ag Committee, which has been nonpartisan, has now been taken over like every other committee in Congress. And I still believe that this food stamp stuff is coming out of the Speaker's office. because Conaway does not have any latitude to negotiate anything, and I think the reason for it is because the Speaker told him he had to put this in the bill. And the Speaker just made a speech yesterday saying, we got to have this welfare reform, you know, and he can't do it any other place, so he's going to do it in the Farm Bill. So all I can say is I'm willing to work with them if they come up with something sensible.
Congressman Colin Peterson joining us. We do have time for one or two more questions if there are questions in the audience. Otherwise, we're coming down on our final 7 minutes or so, and we're going to work our way on over. I guess we're going to start over on, let's go to Ron first. Going to give you 60 seconds, 90 seconds to kind of recap or maybe give a final message, Ron. And I hate to condense us on time here, but we're coming up on 11 o'clock. So Ron, go ahead. And once again, we appreciate you being here.
I guess I just want to touch on what Joe and said earlier. I've been telling the farmers out there right now, just stop. Because, I mean, if you're a 50-cow dairy, if you're a 100-cow or a 500-cow dairy, just stop. I mean, the old-timers that I visited over the past 30 years said it, what's in the wallet at the end of the month is what you made. So I'm asking all farmers in our state, just be better at and more efficient at what you're doing, because doubling your herd or expanding isn't going to correct this problem. And it's going to magnify on your end because, I mean, if you ain't making it right now, going bigger is just going to set you up for failure even quicker. So, Joe said that we haven't taken milk, and Joe and I and the rest of the people in our room down there at First District, that hurts because our makeup of our co-op down there is farmers. And the last thing I hate to see, 30 years ago when I started farming, I had 10 people in the room that, in the yard that wanted my milk. Now to be a young farmer and start to farm, you got to go look for a place to go with your milk before you get the cows. So that's really just totally wrong. So, I'm hoping one day, I'm proud to be a part of the Elmdale Creamery up there and the patrons up there, and I'm proud to be part of First District because we're going to be here today and tomorrow. But like I said, tighten the belt, and I feel for everybody who depends on us spending money because we're good at what we do and we operate within our means. And like I said, if our government would take some of our lessons to heart, they'd be really good at their job too.
All right, well said, Ron. Thank you, Steve. We'll go to you, Steve Schlungen. Final comments as well this morning.
Well, just to take a little bit off of what Ron said about being here for our future, for our farms as a co-op, that's what we need to do at AMPI also. We need to keep our co-op strong. We need to continue to improve and be more efficient. We are starting to take some new beginning farmers on this spring gradually. But there's just a couple things I want to mention before we forget and leave here. If you want to check out the MPP program, you can go to Mark Stevenson's margin protection decision tool. And it's at www.dairymarkets.org. You can check that out. The premiums, I believe, are due by September 1st. I think you can pay some ahead if you want, but I believe that's when the premium will be due for the MPP sign-up. And I think we just all got to keep in mind that 95% of the people in this world live outside of this country, and the middle class is growing much faster everywhere else in the world. It's pretty stable here. It's actually even declining a little bit. And the middle class are the people that can afford our cheese, really, the higher value products that we produce. So we got to not forget about them. But in the meantime, we need a safety net to help get us through, and we need fair trade agreements.
All right, Steve, thank you very much. Brad Vold will get your final comments this morning. Brad, once again, thanks for being here, and just a few comments to wrap up the morning.
Well, first of all, again, I want to thank Chasm and Congressman Peterson for taking the time to put this forum on because I think it is essential to what we're going through in our industry right now. I guess, you know, just in closing comments, we're in a tough time right now. We will get through it. I think it's all evident today that being a part of the co-op system really is part of that equation to work through the situation we're in. But also I challenge each and every one of you to take the time to contact Washington. That's one thing farmers for a lot of times forget, is that your voice does make a difference, not only at the state level, but at the national level. So take that time, make that phone call, send that email, because that's the only way that you're going to see change. You're talking about adding more money to the farm bill. Well, it starts with you. It starts with your voice getting out there, and it talks, and it really goes back to your neighbors calling. We can make change happen, but we have to work together to make that happen. So with that, I thank you again for giving me the opportunity to be a part of this forum this morning.
All right, Brad, thank you very much. And we'll go over to Gary Werdish. And Gary, I kind of add on to that too. I'll always take a second to say whether you can get involved with whatever Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, corn growers, soybean, whatever it is, it does make an impact if you can be a little more involved in your local and your statewide organizations.
Well, it does. It allows your for your voices to be heard, and that, you know, that is very important. I want to thank Colin for picking up the mantle and working under very challenging times in D.C. now. There's no doubt about it. You know, you mentioned earlier the partisanship has taken over the farm bill, and that's unfortunate. And we will work through that, but it's. You know, I just want to thank you for working there, and you know, it's about keeping families on the farm. And you know, I think you know whether it's supply management or whatever it is, that we need to be open to some of the old ideas that worked years ago. We got away from a lot of that stuff because we're gonna produce and feed the world. Well, you know, the export markets are important to us, and we understand trade agreements need to be done, and we need to actually work on them and get them instead of just doing the rhetoric to rally the base or whatever it is. We need to actually work on them. And but the other side, we have to be honest too, our trade markets or export markets are not our premium prices for our products. You know, we get our premium prices for domestic demand, and you know, I guess we right now on the milk is a good example. We're producing more than we're using, and that's so it puts us in a bad situation. But you know, it's they're going to go back to the farm bill. We need more money. We shouldn't be afraid to ask for it. There seems to be not a shortage of money for other things, so we shouldn't be bashful about asking for more money for a farm bill.
Gary Werdish joining us, Minnesota Farmers Union President. Thank you very much, Gary, for being here. Joe Becker representing 1st District. Joe, just some final comments this morning.
I'd like to thank Congressman Peterson for everything he's done in the past. Twice I've been out to Washington with the Upper Midwest Dairy Coalition, talked to all the Congress people that are out there that are on the ag committees. Talking to them is kind of preaching to the choir. They know the issues that are out there, but they're a small percentage of all the Congress people that are there. And so it's not an easy job for them to come up with something that really helps us out.
On my second microphone already this morning. Thank you, Joe Becker, with 1st District joining us this morning. A need to invest in batteries. We all learned that this morning. Kevin Pat, Minnesota Farm Bureau President. Kevin, a few extra comments this morning, please.
Again, I want to thank not only KSM for doing this important topic today, but I want to thank the congressman for that, for all he has done, but more importantly, everything you're going to continue to do. Keep up the fight. You're a representative there that not only the congressional district, but the whole state, quite frankly, the country and agriculture is ranking member. Don't give up. Keep fighting for us. And just remind everybody, remember, today is National Hug Your News Reporter Day. So everybody hug your news reporter.
You know, I'll take all the hugs I can get, everybody. So don't be shy. I even showered yesterday, I think. Colin, once again, we appreciate your time being here this morning. And I also just like to drop the note, too. You really... welcome comments, seeing people's faces. It does make a difference. Hearing their story does make a difference. Whether we do a 90-minute radio show here in Albany, they give you a call, or you do an email, it does make a difference. They make a difference as well.
Well, this is our government, and it's going to be about as good as we get involved with it. You know, and if you don't get involved, then you kind of deserve what you get. So it's very important that you stay engaged. I have about 20 sheets here that have the latest information as of yesterday on if you sign up for $8 coverage on the full 5 million pounds, how much your premium would be, and how much you would get out of the system. So if you're interested in that, I got about 20 of them. You're going to have that information, I think, at the FSA office at some point. But, you know, that's available up here. And I want to thank Chasm and the other panelists for coming here today and making this issue more in the highlight. And thank the people here in the audience and the people that ask questions. It's a tough situation, but we'll get through it. We always do. We don't always do things right at the first, but eventually we figure it out and we get it done. So I think we will figure out a better way forward and look forward to working with everybody to make it happen.
And we look forward to continuing the conversation on Chasm Radio each and every day as well in regards to agriculture. Big thank you to all of our sponsors, Amid Soda Manufacturing and Avon, Lando Lakes, Stearns Bank, Albany, Compeer Financial, and Central Minnesota Credit Union. Thank you to First District for the cheese that we enjoyed this morning. Stick around, have some lunch, continue the conversation as well. And once again, for Chasm Radio and our panel here at Shady's Hometown Tavern in Albany, Brad, we'll send it back your way at the Chasm Radio Studios.